Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jep and Luke Cutfirth.
Hi, howdy.
This week, we're talking about GMO tickers and pork pumps. But first, why don't we look at a little Apple review?
Okay.
So this one comes from Angry Face K. It is, I know, but it's 5 stars. And I've just checked, actually, our Apple score, our Apple like thing, it's 5 out of 5 stars. It's been on 4.9 for so long. We've hit 5 stars.
Wow. Very good.
You guys have been leaving so many 5-star reviews, which is awesome. Please leave some more and we'll read them out on the show. So this one says, absolutely fantastic podcast, a perfect mix of actual science and dumb conversations. It's currently my favorite podcast and I would recommend it to anyone wanting to learn about science in a more interesting way.
Oh, that's so nice. I also think that Angry Face K might be a more discerning person on average, and yet we have impressed her. So that's lovely.
Why do you assume it's a her?
Angry Face K?
K, as in the letter K.
Oh, I thought it was the name K.
Nope.
The woman's
letter
name K.
K. Just angry right. Face,
well,
letter
K. You can just cut that out if you like.
And a question for you all. Head down to the YouTube comments if you have not already and answer this. Would you be an organ donor? I'm genuinely curious. If you're listening on audio, then get yourself to the YouTube comments and answer it. Go ahead. There's plenty of other stuff on the Sci Guys YouTube channel. Why don't we start the show?
You don't want my organs. They're rotten.
I've seen them. So we've spoken about translabs before on the show, and we've spoken about it a few times actually, and as always I've got to say that they are a miracle of science and medicine. Surgery is just like the coolest thing, right? Like, it's crazy the fact that we can just cut someone open, mess around a bit, and then put them back together, or, like, chop some bits off, and it doesn't hurt the person. It actually makes them better.
Sorry, can I just check, you're saying transplants? Because at the start, it sounded like you said trans lives.
Transplants.
Okay.
I thought you said trans lives.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, how does
this... Did I say trans lives?
You said, we've talked about trans lives a lot in the past.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked... Well, I thought that's what I heard, and I was like, I must have misheard that.
Okay. So we've spoken about transplants. We've also spoken about trans lives. We've spoken about transplants.
This is why I was confused, because we've done both of these things.
Weird. But I'm talking about transplants. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, is your body bothering you? Let me just chop some of it off, and you'll feel good again. There you go. It's insane. It's insane that it happens.
Yeah.
So, like, from a layman's perspective, I just feel like surgery shouldn't work at all. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It looks like you're hurting the person, but you're not hurting the person.
You're making them stronger.
You're making them better.
You're making them better. It's insane. It feels wrong. And the only reason, I think, I realized this whilst I was writing this episode, the only reason you don't think that surgery is, like, weird or strange or insane is because you have grown up in a world where it's always existed.
Mm.
If we didn't have surgery and someone tried to introduce it, like, tomorrow, you would think they were insane. You'd think they were unhinged.
Yeah, you would actually.
You would, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't. You'd be like, listen, like, maybe we won't do this thing where we just, like, you know, completely reconstruct someone's face or, you know, chop open someone's heart and mess around with it for a bit.
You might, like, get the hacking up your body.
Exactly.
Your dialogue you get from, like, transphobes.
It's weird because I suppose the fact that it works kind of shows that in although the mechanisms by which it works are very complex, it also shows that in some ways, in certain ways, the body is more simple than we would think.
It's very crude, yeah.
Because it doesn't have to just grow from scratch and then you can't do anything to it. You can just chop a bit out and then put it in another one and it will kind of work.
It's very robust. Like the surgery wherein you can have a really aggressive bone cancer or the bone of your shin has deteriorated so greatly that you need it to be amputated. But your foot is fine and you need to have the knee joint amputated.
Yes.
So you've got a perfectly good ankle joint there.
Mm.
So what they do is they just cut off the part of the leg that is not okay. They take the ankle joint and they attach your foot backwards to where your knee would be, and then you've got you could have a prosthetic leg and a working knee.
Yeah,
made
a few
from
people on
ankle.
TikTok who do it as well.
I was about to say this. Great. I thought it was special effects when I first saw it because I saw a couple of TikTok accounts.
Yeah,
and I was like, "This is fake, obviously."
It's mad.
No, it's real.
It's mad. And bodies can just do do that, and it's like, okay, I guess my foot is my ankle is my knee now. Cool. Okay.
And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'd love to ask somebody who's had this surgery done. Does it feel like they're moving their ankle, or does it feel like they're moving their knee?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I remember watching a video where someone explained this. Oh, this is so interesting, right? Maybe we should do a video on one of those surgeries and have someone on. Yeah. If you know a TikToker or something that's had this surgery that really like enjoys talking about it, let us know in the comments, and we'll see if we can get them on to talk about this kind of surgery.
That
right?
Is so good.
But recently, surgery took a step up and became like incredibly more metal. There is a brand new kind of surgery happening, a xenotransplantation, or xenotransplants, and it is incredible. A man had a genetically modified pig heart transplanted into him, and he is still alive and well. The pig is not the man is not the pig. The pig is definitely dead. The man is alive and well.
It just started like honking.
But the man is alive and well, with like living with a pig heart. Have you heard about this?
I thought we'd been doing this for a lot longer than...
You think so?
Oh, I thought they'd been doing something with pig organs for quite a while. Have we been using other organs of pigs?
Well, we
started with the heart.
Well, we'll get into... Well, yeah. Well, we've done... We'll get into the history of it.
Okay.
But the sort of xenotransplants are very new.
Is that why it's xeno? Because it's foreign... From a foreign species.
Yeah.
In my notes, it said, you might hear xenotransplant and think someone's reading out like a neo-gender on their Twitter profile, but let's break it down, and then literally the definition of xenotransplant. But yeah.
A pig heart's similar size to human hearts.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's coming up later.
Being like the size of a head.
No,
I don't know why I thought that.
Pigs have got a lot of weird similarities with humans.
Yeah.
With humans, because they're omnivores as well, they've got really similar teeth to us, which is always really weird and strange. No, they do. They've got very similar tooth setup. They're similar in that sense. I think we used pig insulin for quite a while before we started manufacturing. Before we started manufacturing insulin using, I think, microorganisms. But I think we might even still use pig insulin. I'm not totally sure on that. But yeah, we use pigs for a lot of things beyond just, you know, pork and bacon. They're really interesting. But so xenotransplant, xeno meaning strange or foreign from the Greek, trans across, which is Latin, and then plant from plantare to plant, Latin.
Yes.
It's taking a foreign thing and transplanting it into someone's body. Essentially, it's when you take organs or tissues or cells from one organism and implant it into an organism of another species. So this definition I've got here is from the FDA. It says xenotransplantation is any procedure that involves the transplantation, implantation, or infusion into a human recipient of either A, live cells, tissues, or organs from a non-human animal source, or B, human body fluids, cells, tissues, or organs that have had ex vivo contact with live non-human animal cells, tissues, or organs. What that means is essentially, if you take something from an animal that is not a human and put it into a human, like for a medical reason, you know, like, you know, like not just making them eat it, like surgically implant it, or you take a part of a person out, mess with it in a test tube or something with some animal cells, and then put it back in. Those are both, you know, xenotransplantation.
When they grew an ear on the back of a mouse,
when they grew an ear on the back of a mouse, they didn't grow a human ear on the back of a mouse. What they did was they made a mouse grow cartilage in the shape of an ear. The outside of an ear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a really, really annoying, because I think
it's an important distinction.
Well, no, I remember thinking that was because I think I saw it on South Park. We've spoken about this on the podcast before.
But what is an ear if not just cartilage in the shape of an ear?
Yeah, but it wasn't.
It's not a human ear.
It's not like they just turned on the genes for a human ear on a mouse and made it grow that. Yeah, you know I mean, although I think there are things, there is either this is, I can't remember if this is happening or not yet, but there is the idea of growing body parts. I think you sort of start growing it in a test tube and then you can sew it into the person and then it grows a little bit more in there. I can't remember what this is. I might have to look into it for another episode, but something to look into if you're interested in this sort of thing.
They can go willies that way, can't they?
No,
I think I've seen that.
That was South Park.
It might have been South
Park. Yeah, when they found out about the mouse having an ear on its back, they made an episode about growing that on a. But the issue is that it's not human tissue.
Oh, that's so funny.
I'm pretty sure.
So you couldn't xenotransplant that specific ear onto a person.
You wouldn't. It's far easier just to get a prosthetic.
Okay.
For a pinna.
Okay.
Because it is just the outer part of the ear, which there's no point in transplanting that when you can just get a plastic one, right, that does the same job.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The whereas magnetic one that just clips on and off.
Really, when we're talking about transplants, it comes to joints and limbs, things that are harder to mechanically make. I mean, limbs less so, but wait, so I say joints and limbs, I meant organs and limbs. So like, you know, limbs are, you can make them mechanically, so they're transplanted way less often. But organs, they do specific jobs. It's kind of hard to, like, you can have dialysis, sure, but you need to be in a hospital bed. Like, you're not carrying that thing around with you, you know? So that's where transplants really come in. It's for organs and things that are essential because there's such risks associated with it. But why do you think we're doing xenotransplants?
To help people who have lost things or have poorly functioning organs.
So let me ask the question again. Why specifically are we using xenotransplants?
Is it cost effective?
Well, I would imagine there's a shortage of organs.
Yeah, absolutely. You're spot on.
And you're basically, like, it's just a different type of farming. You're just changing the pig so that it grows a thing that the human's body will accept. And then you're just killing the pig, which is, you know, sad. But you do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then you got a heart. Cool.
Yeah. I suppose if you want, if it passes all the tests, you could just eat the pig anyway.
Yeah, what happens to the rest of the pig?
I have no idea. They don't say that kind of thing. They usually tend to avoid talking about the killing the animals.
Yeah.
In things like this. I mean, we'll get...
Can you not give the pig a heart, a pig heart from another pig?
Well, then it just goes down the chain, doesn't it?
Oh my God. Like, until you find a pig that's born with two hearts and
you've got to find a pig that's just recently, you know, been in an accident or something, take its heart, because it's dead. You take its heart, transplant it into the donor pig.
You can just do that with
people
as well.
Yeah, I feel like you've just... So the reason that we're... So I know that you answered this question correctly, but I feel like you don't understand your answer.
No,
The reason that we're...
Yeah.
You've got to rely on people dying with viable organs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's actually... So
I do understand that, but what I mean is the pig that's genetically modified to grow a heart that we can accept could also itself have a pig heart, which we couldn't accept. Like, just a normal pig heart, I assume, because we're genetically modifying this pig, we can't accept just a raw pig heart from a pig. But the genetically modified pig might be able to accept a raw pig heart from a recently deceased pig.
But then what I'm saying is...
There's not a shortage of recently deceased pigs. I hate to break it to you, there's lots of recently deceased pigs. So...
Do you know what? How about this?
I don't understand the problem. Is it the viability of doing the operation on the pig and they don't care about it enough?
You have to do two operations
I don't have it. Can you explain why this is a problem, please?
I don't want to.
Please.
Why is this a problem? I don't understand. I need you to answer this now.
Okay. Luke, why would you...
I just think we've taken the thing we're already doing to people.
Yeah.
And just doing it to a pig instead.
You're shifting the problem, right? Yeah. Like, the problem is that there's a shortage of organs because not enough people are dying. And so if you're wanting to cover that with pigs, then you need to take the hearts out of recently deceased pigs and put them in those other pigs so that they'll live a certain amount of time. But also then you'll need to have a place to keep all of those pigs that you're using for human organ transplants. For why?
You have to do
for
two
a lower
surgeries.
Quality
you've
of life.
You've grown them and taken their heart from them. So the least you could do is give them a replacement heart.
Why not just eat them?
Well, because that's sad. I don't eat them. Neither do you.
If you're killing a pig for a heart anyway, you may as well chow down on it.
So are we going to get to the point where farmers, if this carries on and is successful, you're going to have like pig farms where all the pigs are growing kind of pseudo-human hearts. And then when they go for slaughter, you take their heart and you give it to a person and then you make the pig into bacon. And then the person can eat the bacon
is
off
that
the
cannibalism?
Pig. Yeah, well, I don't know, is it? Because then the person can eat the pig's bacon of the heart that's keeping them alive.
I don't care.
Then you've got a real moral quandary here, because you're alive and you kind of want to be alive, but you're eating the thing that you killed in order to be alive.
Oh. I'm not going to wait him, so I don't care.
I didn't expect this. So you're right. That is why we're researching xenotransplants, Luke.
I did fail to take into account that the majority of the human race doesn't particularly value the lives of pigs. Yeah, that was the problem I'd made, yes. But, you know, I liked living in that naive world for a moment.
This is like the blankets for cows thing all over again.
You're really pulling like a robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of situation where, like, we're taking this pig heart, so we'll take this other pig, and we don't want to kill the pig, so we'll take this pig that we've already killed and take its heart and give it to the pig that would die without the heart.
Because he's done us a service. He grew us a heart. Got to give him a retirement fund.
So that you're right about why we are doing xenotransplants, and I'll just reiterate that. It's because there is a massive demand for human organs, and the supply just cannot meet the demand. And over 6,000 people in the UK are waiting for organs right now. Over 2,900 have received an organ since April 2021. And in the US, 10 people die every single day waiting for organs.
Oh.
Which is, it's an insane number. And you can donate a kidney or a liver or some... like bone marrow or other some other things as well.
How many livers do we have?
Sorry, a bit of liver, not a whole liver.
Well, but you
so
can,
your liver grows back.
Yeah, so you can like your single liver can be donated to two separate people because the liver grows back.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, your liver. Yeah, your liver does will it? Regenerate. Like, your liver is an
Why
organ that just that? Regenerates real
Why
well.
I don't know that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You can have loads of your liver cut off and it'll just grow back to a full liver.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because...
We should do more of that.
No, ideally, we should do less of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but think about it. Your skin is the same. You can cut off some skin and your skin will grow back a little bit. Not quite as well as a liver. Your blood regenerates as well. Yeah. It's not really an organ, but, you know, it's weird because most of our organs are very highly specialized and very specific, all the little structures in them. So it's very difficult to grow parts of those back. Because you'll probably die before that happens. But with the liver, it's the way that it's, I think, set up makes it easier for you to survive long enough for you to regenerate it, and it's just capable of doing that. So you can donate a part of your liver, or you can donate a kidney while you're still alive. And so I think that's over 1,000 people do it every year in the UK. They donate a kidney or part of their liver. But most organ donations obviously come from people who are
dead.
Yeah. And that is an issue. Why do you think it's an issue taking organs from dead people?
They might not be working.
Exactly. Yeah. So you need to take organs from dead people who have got working organs, but often people who are dead.
Freshly dead.
Yeah, fresh. Well, that's the issue as well.
But like
there's
car
multiple
crash
issues
victims,
here.
Like died for no reason because of their organs.
Yeah, exactly. But you also need to make sure that the organs aren't damaged.
Yeah.
In whatever killed the person. So it's a tough thing. And I've actually got some stats here. It's actually quite interesting. I'll give them to you in a second. They need to die with relatively healthy organs, like we've said. Yeah. And the organs need to be taken out, prepped for surgery before they go off. And it's not as simple as just scooping out an organ from a dead person and popping it in someone else. Like, you need to, there's so many things need to go like right before you're able to do it. Mm. It's interesting. So if you look at, I think this is last year. So from the 1st of April, 2020 to the 31st of March, 2021, that year. So the number of donors in the UK that were donors after brain death is 766. So 766 people, they had brain death.
That's not a lot.
So they could harvest their organs. Exactly. Donors after circulatory death. So basically your heart kaput. That's 414. Total deceased donors was 1,180, which is down from the year before that, which was 1,580 total dead people giving organs. And then so they had some living donors as well, but it was like that's way less, like under 1,000 put together. It's absolutely mental. They've also got stats. If you go to the NHS, the blood and transplant part, they give you stats on the number of people that are just getting transplants. Like, can you get it's updated weekly and everything. Mm. It's really interesting. It also tells you how many of them are under 18, which you don't want to look at that.
It'll make you sad.
No, yeah, it's not fun. Not fun to look at. But it is really interesting, this whole transplant thing, because the xenotransplantation can obviously help solve that problem by allowing us to grow genetically modified organs in animals and then harvesting them for human use. So it sounds pretty horrific when you say it like that, but it's still better than the meat industry, isn't it?
Well, it's not worse. It might be weird. I suppose it's like a bit tangential because it's also like just a strange thing to do. Like it's not so much an ethical thing in terms of the life. It's then getting into the whole world of ethics of genetic modification and blah, 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 blah. People will go on about.
Skip that stuff.
It's kind of strange in two ways. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, look, people often bring up concerns about genetic modification in the comments, and like, maybe it's the biotechnologist in me, but eh.
Maybe it's the knowledge that I have.
No, I'm talking about it more in a Jurassic Park, as in, like, you know, I'm able to do it, so I'll do it kind of thing. I'm not going to think it through too much. I'll try and make sure that, it, you know, there aren't any ramifications for the planet. But I want dinosaurs, so I'm going to make dinosaurs kind of thing.
No, that's what you're talking about. We're back on this again.
We're back on the dinosaur train! No, so...
dinosaur train, that's something I'd like to see.
Ooh. Jurassic World 5?
How are you going to get your dinosaurs around without a dinosaur train?
Yeah, that probably is the best way to get them around. Yeah. Trains are quite sturdy.
Yeah.
On rails.
A big arc.
Yeah, no chance of a car crash and them getting out.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, we patent that dinosaur train now. And
we'll
sort it out later.
What have I innovated other than it's a big train that dinosaurs can go in?
Oh, no, we'll make a latch that's dinosaur proof.
That's pretty good, actually, yeah.
Right? Yeah. That would have solved a lot of problems in Jurassic Park.
Maybe it's powered by the dinosaurs like pedaling or something.
Ah, very good. Renewable.
Have, like, really high up handlebars for T-Rexes.
I forgot that the main issue with trains is how to power them.
Yeah.
That's the real problem we've been having with locomotives.
Well, there's just... At the train, there's just holes in the floor, so the dinosaur's feet just run along.
Oh, Fred Flintstone type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Could we please try and submit a patent for a dinosaur train and see if we can get it through?
Yeah.
Like, try and think up some weird, stupid thing that allows the dinosaurs, like, to, like, I don't know, they've got VR goggles on, so they think they're running, and then they've got a treadmill and they're running on it, and that specific set of innovations, we patent it, we own that patent, and that's just a thing that SciGuys owns.
Look, I don't know if you know the strict guidelines of patents.
I do not know that far, no.
I had to study it in university. One important thing is that it needs to have a use case. It needs to be useful. It needs to be novel and useful. So we've got the novelty
down.
Well,
it can be useful.
Yeah, and there's definitely not going to be any prior art.
Yeah.
So again, novelty is good.
Yeah.
Useful is more, because the dinosaurs that we've got are generally chickens and whatnot, right? So we probably want to get dinosaurs that are not chickens.
Okay, how about, okay, we'll broaden it to say just large animals, and then possible use cases, we'll list dinosaur train.
Elephants.
I'm not fussy, as
giraffes,
long as I can get
whales.
The word dinosaur. No, blue whales can't walk on a treadmill.
Unless you fill it with water.
No,
but then still they can't. They haven't got legs.
Jeez Louise. Well,
what movement of the blue whale are you going to turn into electricity?
That one where you turn
wave
water.
Power.
Yeah, wave power, that's it, wave power. They can just flap. Hydroelectric, that's it, yeah, that's it.
We, quite ironically, in talking about this dinosaur train, have gone entirely off the rails. Let's hop back on and talk about the history of xenotransplantation, shall we?
I'm so sorry, yes, please.
Please, yeah.
So, you were asking about this. You thought, look, that we've done this quite a bit.
Or maybe it was just that I knew we were experimenting with genetically modifying pigs to grow human organs.
It's been a big news story, a month or two ago, so it's probably in your head from then. I think January, it was real big, and February, start of February, it was also quite a big thing. It's kind of newer than you'd think, but also it does have a long and old history. One of the papers I read, actually, really interestingly, it does something that I really love when papers do. It spoke about mythology very briefly. Mm-hmm. I had a very brief couple paragraphs on mythology, which is good because it provides important context for the scientific background, because, you know, it influences people. It makes sense. And if you look at a lot of cultures, there is this fascination of the merging of human and animal. Like the one that came to me immediately was Ganesha from sort of Hinduism. You know, the elephant head on the human body, which has a fantastic story behind it, by the way. Definitely look into that one. Like, ace, love it. But there's been this idea of human-animal transplantation for a long, long time. But the history of it is maybe about 300 or so years old, apparently, of people actually sort of trying to do this. That's what I found, at least. So it's only been recently that we've actually made steps forwards in all the other areas to make it possible, which is, I love about science. You discover genetic modification, and it suddenly opens doors where we can put a pig heart in someone. Amazing. So the interesting thing about this is that, like we mentioned in our uterus transplants episode, that organ transplants are actually way more recent than we'd think. Like, I think kidney transplants are not terribly, not too much older than us. Like, our generation grew up with organ transplants being... just commonplace,
normal, yeah,
and it's really difficult for us to imagine them not being like that. But yeah, they are. Like, in the sort of 20th century is when they really were able to do it. Like, yeah. I think the mid to late 20th century. So they are very, very new things, which makes sense because they are very difficult to perform. So the 17th to 20th century, so between the 17th and 20th centuries, blood transfusions between animals and humans that happened then in the 19th century, skin grafts. Were something that was happening. I think that was when the first sort of skin grafts were happening. Frogs were the most popular, apparently. Bear in mind, these are all from animal to human. So they would cover ulcers with frog skin. Probably they weren't permanent, though. It was just until the sort of ulcer healed, I guess. And then basically the frogs, using the frog skin as a kind of
like
scab.
A plaster.
Yeah, plaster as a scab. Yeah. Mm. Frogs are useful. They're great. Pregnancy tests, plasters. Really, if you're running low on money, right? And you can't fill up your sort of medicine cabinet, just pop down to the local pond, scoop up a few tadpoles, keep some frogs in your bathroom.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
I've always said frog skin was nature's band-aid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you pee on one to find out if you're pregnant or not.
Pee on a specific type of frog, not just a frog from the local pond.
You don't know if that's the kind of frog in the pond. You never know.
Okay.
You just keep getting frogs to get the result you want.
Exactly. And you get another kind of frog and, you know, oh, I'm feeling a bit, I've got a bit of pain. Wow. I'm on a different planet.
I'm tripping.
Frogs are a cure-all. They are a panacea, I think.
Can I just check, because I am actually genuinely interested to find out if you're just lying. If I go to my local pond, for example, in England, are there any use cases for the frogs in my local pond?
Looking at, because they're really cute.
Specifically to replace my medicine cabinet.
I'm into replace antidepressants.
Oh my lord.
What?
What?
I just searched this and there's an article in the BBC from 2019. Escapee pregnancy test frogs colonized Wales for 50 years.
Ah, so if you're in Wales, you could in the past go down to your local pond, piss on some frogs and find out if you're pregnant.
Yeah, and also, do you remember the clawed frogs we were talking about a while back?
Oh, yeah.
The Xenobots? Pregnancy tests used to be African clawed frogs, says Business Insider.
Ah.
So clawed frogs, very useful little things.
Would they try and claw you if you're pregnant?
No, they've just got claws on their three back feet, on their back toes, remember? And interestingly, the name of those frogs, Xeno is in it, remember?
Ah.
Right?
Yeah, fine.
Which brings us back to the xenotransplants. So
without answering my question, continue.
I just told you that I answered your question.
If I'm in Wales, then yes.
In Wales, potentially. So the fact is that those frogs have escaped and populated Wales, so potentially yes. I don't know if it would work with other frogs, but in the UK there could conceivably be a population of frogs that you could pee on to test if you're pregnant, although that is generally not going to be useful for you.
No.
How are you meant to tell what happens to the frog?
The frog
when you
changes colour, I think.
Does it?
Was it sick?
Let's get the two lines appear on the frog.
No, the frog lays eggs.
No, that's for COVID.
The frog spawns.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, sorry, the frog spawns. Yes.
Changes color. It's like the indicator fluid. You know, like your strips, your litmus strips.
Yeah. Yeah.
The frog just says you are pregnant.
It changes color, and it literally just shows you are pregnant written on the back of the frog. God works in mysterious ways.
So if you're pregnant and you pee on a frog, the frog itself then lays eggs.
I think it spawns. Because what happens is there is a specific hormone that when you get pregnant, it's almost immediately produced in massive, in relatively massive quantities in your, and it's released through your urine. And that hormone, I think, also then triggers that process in the frog. If you want a more thorough explanation of that, we did cover this, I think, in probably the eugenics and birth control episode, I think.
Mm.
Or we did it in a bonus episode. Just check through the SciGuys canon. Just listen to all
the episodes. Just listen to all of them.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
So back to the history, because we've got to get through this. We've got the pig cornea in 1838. So that was 65 years before they attempted it with a human cornea. And then we've got the 1920s. We've spoken about this before, I'm fairly sure, in the Human Z episode. They took chimp testicles and they sewed them into human to rejuvenate them.
And it didn't work. Mm.
Of course it didn't. It's chimp testicles just sewn into... No, of course it didn't work. I literally have written here, we may have mentioned this before, possibly in the Human Z episode. My disdain was not at you.
It was with
the man who decided to sew chimp testicles.
But it's how prevalent it was. It was very prevalent.
I don't think so. I think it was one guy doing it.
Oh, really? But I thought it was like some people would go and get chimp testicles sewn into themselves.
You know, I don't know. So what we should do, instead of making a bold statement, if anyone wants to know more about this, go ahead and check out our Human Z episode.
Okay.
If it's not there, then there's a playlist of animal-based episodes. It will be in one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From my recollection, I'm fairly sure there were like some prominent people who we would have heard of who are rumored to have had chimp testicles or maybe actually just other men's testicles sewn into their testicles.
In the 1920s?
I don't know when, but that's recalled from the annals of some memory.
Something
about sewing something into your testicles to rejuvenate yourself, and it didn't work, but quite a lot of people have.
That is a common thing that like people tend to focus on. But moving on, we've got chimp kidneys in 1963 to 1964. They didn't have dialysis back then. There was a human kidney shortage. They did it to 13 people, and I don't know what happened to 12 of them. One of them was able to work for 9 months and suddenly died from what is believed to be an electrolyte disturbance. I have no more information on this one.
I thought you were going to say kidney failure.
Yeah, no. I mean, electrolyte disturbance is related to the kidneys.
Yeah.
I have no idea about this. I saw it as I was looking through the brief history. If you want to do a history of this, by the way, if you want to do a history of xenotransplants episode or look into this chimp kidney story, we can absolutely do it in a future episode. But I just want to give some like much needed background to this surgery. Yeah. So this one, I literally have no idea what was going on with it. But 1964... the same year or a year afterwards, in some cases, they took a chimp heart and they transplanted it into a person, which I think we've also spoken about before. The chimp died, but the person died within 2 hours. So wasn't great. But in 1966, we took a chimp liver and we put it into a person. And then I think by 1992, that surgeon or that doctor was able to get a patient to live for up to 70 days with a baboon liver inside of them.
70 days is not a long time.
Yeah, but if you're terminally ill, 70 days is
not dreadful.
It's better than 0 days.
Yes.
Right? I mean, if you've got if you've got liver failure, and you get your liver replaced with a baboon liver and you live for 70 days,
it's pretty good.
It's not going to get funded on the NHS though, is it?
No. I mean, you'd be surprised. So then 1993, pig islet cells, those are pancreatic cells, I believe. So they were used to treat, I think, type 1 diabetes. Mm. That was in 1993. And in 2021, just last year, there was a pig kidney transplant. And I've actually got a quote explaining this. It says, last year, a team from New York University Langone Health, New York, New York, USA, attached a genetically modified pig kidney to a woman with no brain activity who was being kept alive by a ventilator. The woman's family gave permission for the operation. The researchers connected the kidney to blood vessels on the upper leg and observed it for 54 hours. They reported that it functioned normally without rejection. That was published in a Lancet article in, 2022, this year, which you can find in the description of this video. So that is just a brief history of xenotransplants. Like you can see a lot of failures, and then we started doing human organ transplants, and we were quite good at that, and we're just now sort of swinging back around to using animals because we now understand a lot more about the immune system, and we're able to manipulate genetics in order to get around that. But we'll get to that in just a second. So I want to talk about sort of major risks and obstacles when it comes to xenotransplants. And there are two major risks and obstacles from my viewpoint of what I've read into. And it's the two actions, as I call them, rejection and infection. Those are the two main obstacles, rejection and infection. So rejection is something we all fear, I am very sure.
Especially when your organs reject you.
So unlikable.
Oh, God.
So whenever you transplant an organ from one person to another, there's always the risk of rejection, obviously. What that means is, do you know what that means?
Yes, where the immune system attacks the organ you've just transplanted.
Exactly. So the immune system recognizes the organ or tissue or whatever it is as foreign and then just starts destroying it because that's what its job is. It's
silly made. Immune system.
Well, I literally have it written that the immune system is very complex and very good, but it's also very dumb. And
yes.
I don't mean that in like a silly, like, ooh, silly immune system sense, but it's just very, very good at what it does. It's very, could be very, very specific.
Yes, it didn't exactly evolve for having other things sewn into you.
Yes.
So, no, you can forgive it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's trying its best.
It's just, it doesn't see the big picture, right? Yeah. It has its one specific task that it does. Each sort of part of your immune system does the one specific task. And part of that task is recognizing something that's foreign, then destroying it.
It's like, quite with xenophobic,
absolute
isn't it?
Prejudice. Yeah, it is literally xenophobia.
Xenophobic, yeah.
And there are obviously like a different number of ways that you can destroy things with the immune system. Some of them more specific, some of them less specific. But again, the main thing to take away from this is the immune system doesn't know whether something is good or bad. It just knows whether it doesn't even know whether something is foreign, technically. Yeah. It only knows that it is registered. It is something that it doesn't recognize as being a part of your body. Mm. And in cases of like, autoimmune disorders, it literally could like incorrectly recognize something as foreign. So it doesn't even tell foreign properly necessarily. And it's a really good way to think about it, right? Because when you look at autoimmune disorders, you can kind of think, oh, the immune system is kind of like the Hulk, right? Like in some very, with the Avengers, before the Hulk got smart, what they would do is take the Hulk and then just kind of aim him, because the Hulk really likes to smash stuff.
He does, yeah.
He loves smashing. Your immune system loves to smash, but
Sometimes it smashes itself.
Yeah, like it's not very good. It doesn't care what it's smashing or why. It's just you tell it what to smash, and it's like, cool, I love Smash, and I'm going to smash that so good. Yeah. Just watch me.
Like in Thor 3 when the Hulk smashes Thor. He's like, but he's my friend from work. It doesn't make sense,
I like to smash.
Hulk smashes anyway.
Or when he smashes Surtur, and Thor is like, hey, no, we want that to happen. That is literally a transplant, right? Like Hulk sees Surtur and is like, oh, well, that's a big monster. I need to attack it. And Thor is like, no. We want this big monster. It's helping
us. This big monster good in this case.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And so I guess in that case, Thor would be immunosuppressants.
I am lost.
So in autoimmune disorder, obviously, your immune system starts recognizing parts of your body as foreign and then starts attacking it. And again, really what I'm saying here is that its job, the immune system, it doesn't have a job. It's just a story that we tell. The immune system, and I'm going to grossly oversimplify here, just recognizes and then destroys stuff. That is, to put it like as simply as possible, that is what it does. Recognize and destroy. That's its main thing. And the way that the immune system recognizes stuff, do you know how it does that?
The little spike proteins on the surface of things. No?
Well, just proteins on the surface. Yeah, so the proteins on the surface of, the proteins on the surface of cells or any sort of foreign body. If it's got something on the surface of it that it recognizes, I don't even think it necessarily has to be a protein. Don't quote me on that. Obviously, in a biological context, it is generally proteins. But
it's just like shapes, though, isn't it?
Yeah, proteins really just turns into shape. And also, there's the whole thing about bonds and it gets very complex.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I do not want to talk about biochemistry. Biochemistry is one of those things where, like, if you zoom out, super cool and interesting. Like, oh, wow, this is really great. Then you zoom in and you get to the protein level and you're like, cysteine bonds, stop. It's very complex. And like, honestly, I'm glad I'm not in uni anymore. So obviously, do you know what we do? You mean, I've already mentioned it, but you know what we do when it comes to human transplants, how we stop them from rejecting organs, right?
Immunosuppressants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We just put you on drugs that say to your immune system,
yeah,
calm down, just in general, chill. And that effectively stops you from like rejecting the organ because your immune system is generally just kind of dampened overall.
Yeah.
So it's not attacking the organ. Obviously, that leaves you somewhat vulnerable to diseases as well because you've got an underactive immune system. Mm. But that is preferable to being dead with no organs, right?
That's true.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
If I had to pick.
Great. I have a therapist on speed dial. If you answered incorrectly, you would have been right on the phone with them. No, that was a
joke.
On
the podcast.
Don't get... It's a new section of the show where we just call and get some therapy.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, it's going to be a long episode.
It's time for therapy.
PTSD episode. That would have been great. So you might think that we could do the same with xenotransplants. You might think that, right? That we could just give you an immunosuppressant and it'll be fine.
Is it just too foreign?
It's too foreign. Yeah. So I kind of lied a little bit earlier when I said that it just recognizes foreign. There are different levels of foreign. There's this is human, but not me. Mm. And then there's this is not human and obviously not me, right? Like this is something else.
Super foreign.
Like, which is real bad because like human and not you is probably maybe slightly less bad than not you because not you is probably like not human is probably like a bacterium or a virus, something that is there to do you harm in some way, right? So your body is like, let's get this. And also when it recognizes like, on a human sort of on human material in your body, your immune system can probably recognize some parts of it, right? As in, oh, here are some human things.
Yeah.
It's human because you're a human also, and it recognizes some of those parts, right? So it's slightly more recognized than something that is just completely foreign. So this can just basically make your immune system go into overdrive. It results in something called hyperacute rejection, I think it's called. So hyperacute rejection is the name of this thing when your immune system just goes nuts. And in this case, immunosuppressive drugs on their own just will not cut it. So what do you think? I've already mentioned this. So what do you think we're doing about this? What do you think we're doing to combat the problem of hyperacute rejection?
You're genetically modifying the pig first.
Exactly. So what are we doing to the pig?
Making it grow closer to human heart. Or just a human heart?
No, not even that. We're not closer to human heart. What are you going to say?
Putting human DNA inside the pig?
Yeah, fully. Oh. So what we're doing is, it's not that the pig, the heart is still a pig heart, but what we're doing is we're making the cells look like human cells to your immune system. Weird. And the way that you do that is by just giving the outsides of the cells a little zhuzh to make them have some of the proteins that your immune system will recognize as human.
It. Yeah.
More or less. Okay. It's like, okay, so put it this way. Jamp wants to, I want Jamp to help me work, right? But my boss is a real stickler. I'm not allowed to get anyone to come in and help me work. And if my boss sees anyone that is not me in my workspace, will go nuts. I will probably get fired. So I give Jamp a Kari mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and my boss is like, well, yeah, I suppose that's Kari.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I guess.
So this
Kari.
Is
it is like
you are growing
yeah.
abnormal pig heart. It just also then has a little layer on it, which means it's not
you said,
I know that's an oversimplification. I just mean that you're not growing a human heart inside a pig.
So let me put it this way. On a cellular level, it is a pig heart with pig cells.
Yeah.
But the outsides of the cells, we're changing that. We're changing what the cells look like. Like I'm saying, we're literally putting a mask on. We're basically putting a mask on the cells of the heart.
Mm.
So it's a pig heart with pig cells.
Mm.
It's just that we've made it so that the pig cells look a little bit more like human cells to your immune system. And the way we do that is by adding in some extra proteins and just taking off some proteins.
On the surface of
on the surface. Cells. Sorry, on the surface of the cells. Yeah.
Mm.
Just adding on some extra proteins that are human-y proteins and taking off some piggy proteins from the surface of the cells. And
it's not dissimilar to the way that the vaccine of the recent thing was like creating the spike proteins in order to train it, but it's not creating the rest of it. It's just creating the little spikes.
So that's it operates on exactly the same principle because your immune system recognizes stuff by surface proteins generally. And so if you just you don't need to make a whole thing for your immune system to recognize it necessarily. You just need to make the thing that it can recognize.
So why, out of interest, why don't bacteria or viruses evolve to, or do they evolve?
Because that's not how, they potentially can, but that's not how evolution works, except, you know, because they don't, evolution doesn't work to choose the absolute best method, and it's an arms race as well, right? Like, if you've got bacteria, like, probably, I think the issue is probably the speed, the way that it's working. It'd be very difficult for that to happen.
And I suppose you can't look like a generic, you could look like a generic human cell, but humans still reject human cells if they're not self. So they're still like, even if you're a bacteria and you evolve to sort of be acceptable to kind of like an average human level, you're still going to get attacked as if you're a different human that's not me.
I think maybe. I think some sort of bacteria and I think some viruses do have a bit of camouflage, if we call it that, right? Where they can be a little bit more invisible to the immune system, but it's not a static thing. So the immune system is like, it's incredible, right? It is constantly trying new things out. And so I think at some point someone will be able, like there will be like some kind of sort of antibody that is made that can, or you will be able to recognize some part of like the bacteria sort of thing. So it's a difficult one to think about because it's not static and evolution doesn't go, what's the best thing? It's just what will survive sort of thing.
But obviously you don't necessarily know the answer to this, but theoretically you could engineer something that looks like that.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Stupid so
it's
easily.
Like, it's a dangerous thing that looks like a human thing.
Oh my God, mad easy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, when I say stupid easy, I mean, as far as these things go, it's complex, yeah, but like you could do that.
That's very fully concerning.
You just need to get a bacteria to express surface proteins that are like, I think we've done that literally. Bacteria, surface, protein, human.
Dangerous bacteria that are like Scooby-Doo villains just in masks.
That's so, under that mask. I mean, I think a big thing is like bacteria obviously can have weird membranes as well. So there's difficulties there with that. But I think you could, I may be wrong about that. I'm fairly sure I'm not. I'm pretty sure you could get a bacteria in some way to express surface proteins that are similar enough, that are similar to humans. Whether that would fool the immune system or not, I don't know. But it's a bit, theoretically, unless I'm forgetting something, it's possible to do something like that.
Well, that's nice to know.
But it's harder. When I say it's easy, it's easy. It would be, to my knowledge, it would be easy enough to get a bacteria, like, you know, a strain of bacteria to express certain surface proteins. it would not necessarily be easy enough to get bacteria to express certain surface proteins that would make them like basically invisible to your immune system and also make it very dangerous.
Yes.
Right? Like that is where you start getting more complex, probably. Yes. But I wouldn't be too worried about this sort of stuff. So obviously I've said, what could we do about this? Yeah, genetically alter them to make them look a little bit more like human cells to your immune system. And that's the main thing of sort of rejection done. So infection is a little bit more complex. It's a little bit of a tougher nut to crack. So cross-species infection is always a worry. We know about zoonotic viruses and how they're often the causes for major outbreaks.
No way.
And zoonotic viruses obviously being the ones that come from other animals, cross-species viruses. So viruses and other parasites, and yes, I know that viruses are probably technically not parasites, but it's an easier thing to say. They all depend on living inside of another... You know what I mean, okay? So... they generally don't want to be deadly or hugely dangerous to their hosts. And why do you think that is, Jamp?
Because they want to live inside the host.
Yeah. And so, I mean...
And spread from host to host to host.
So if it's dangerous to the host and it kills the host, then...
That just kind of cuts off their access point.
Exactly.
To other people.
Exactly. So, and the reason that... and that's exactly why, you know, if the host population dwindled, then the virus doesn't have anything to keep it replicating, and it depends on its host to replicate. Yeah. So it has to have a host to jump into to do that. And that's why zoonotic viruses can be such an issue, because we have different immune systems from different animals. So if we've got an animal that has like that's very in tune with this virus, and the virus doesn't harm the animal very much, but if it jumps into a human, it would do. If it were to jump into a human, then it's not geared up for the human immune system, and it can just be really, really virulent and sort of really deadly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily want to be, you know, if we tell the story that a virus wants, it doesn't want to be deadly, but it's just not tuned to being in a human. And so it's going to just...
It's trying to attack another animal.
Yeah, it's trying to live in another animal in enough to like keep replicating, but not so much that it necessarily kills it, or another organism, rather.
Yeah.
And it's... So like what might be a mild disease in one animal could be very deadly or very easily spread in another. So it's kind of like the whole climate change thing, I think. So we lived on the planet in relative harmony, and then we kind of, and I'm going to simplify here, then we kind of discovered coal, and we discovered oil, like crude oil, and gas and natural gas. And then we started burning that stuff. We started making plastics. Mm. And it was this sort of new resource. We jumped into this sort of, in this sort of analogy, we've jumped into a new host, and we're just running wild with it. And then we're realizing, we need to live here.
It's having a bad effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should stop. A virus obviously can't think, maybe I should stop. It can just like randomly mutate until those mutations add up to evolution, where it's just less dangerous. Less deadly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the kind of overview of the issue with infection. And in this case, in this case, retroviruses could be a real issue. So retroviruses are viruses that insert themselves into your DNA. Those could be in the organs, and then those can infect human cells, and then those could spread amongst people, which would be a great start for a zombie movie, by the way. Just perfect. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the retrovirus would infect humans, or that it could even cause disease if it did. I've got a quote here from Biotechnology Innovation Organization from 2018. It says, xenotransplantation opponents voice concerns regarding the unpredictable nature of microorganisms. They point to existing human viruses suspected to have originated in animals, human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, and bovine spongiform encephalopathy. BSE, which people developed Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the human equivalent to BSE. They expressed concern that xenotransplantation puts society as well as the individual recipient at risk for the disease. Basically, what they're saying is, look at all these other diseases that have jumped from animals into humans that have been big bads. We're just asking for trouble if we're doing this. Like, it could put the person at risk, and it could put everyone at risk. Yeah?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, a study in 1999 looked at people who had medical treatments using living pig tissues and found no infected individuals. But they did find pig cells just around the body, not in a bit. They got on holiday.
Going sure. Traveling.
But it does show that pig cells could potentially exist in the body without causing too much of an issue, which is good to know. It's positive. So basically with this one, it seems like we just need to be careful and pay close attention to the pig parts that we're putting in people.
Watch them really hard.
Yeah.
Nope, I don't see any naughty viruses just yet.
And if this was a few years ago, it would have been very ripe for a joke about David Cameron putting his parts in a pig.
Hey, that's a pretty big risk for cross-human, cross-species disease. You just stamp out the Bullingdon Club.
Yeah, if we, I think if we use that front, we might actually get it done.
Yeah.
The whole classism thing is just really not working.
No.
Thus far, but stamping out all of humanity.
We didn't think we had to tell people to not put their penises into pigs. And then we went, well, maybe let's try some the classist aim so that you don't do it. And they're like, no, nah, we're still going to do it, man. We're like, okay, how about the pandemic aim? We'll think about it. Okay, fine.
Look, one of the things I've realized after researching this podcast for years is you need to put warnings on everything because there will be someone that does the thing that you think is so obvious no one should do.
Like put their penis in a pig?
Yeah, or, you know, anything stupid.
Pigs should come with warning labels. Don't put your penis in this.
I mean, I don't think you should be thinking about pigs coming at all, Jam.
What?
Why is that a focus? Why do you want to make pigs come?
Huh? When did I say come?
They'd come with warning labels.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, they come for 30 minutes.
I get you.
Yeah.
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 Plenty of time to get a warning label out. 30 minutes, man. Where's your warning label? In your pocket? Come on.
So the pig heart transplant, how did they test the pig hearts? It wasn't the first xenotransplantation with a pig heart. They have already put a modified pig heart into the abdomen of a baboon. And how long do you think that the baboon pig heart worked for?
37 seconds.
No, we just put it in a person as well. Why would it?
Maybe it didn't work as well.
Oh, man. The baboon lasted less than a minute.
37 days.
Let's just pop it in David. Now, We're getting closer.
37 years.
37. Something, some unit, some multiple of 37.
So it's like 3 years.
Okay.
How many days?
Seven?
Seven.
Sure. Okay, let's just say 3 years and 7 days.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Well, I'm glad I was right.
The heart worked.
How many weeks is 37? Oh, no, hang on.
No, it's not.
Damn.
So the heart worked months.
Yeah. 37 months.
Oh.
It may well be 37 months.
Oh, 3 years and a month. How about that? I guess
this is a very painful episode. So this, as I said, the heart stopped working after 3 years, or it worked for 3 years until it was rejected. But apparently, and this is one I'm not so sure about, but it was rejected because they stopped giving it a specific antibody that prevented rejection.
So they were trying it. They were trying something out. And it didn't work.
I'm not sure. The way so actually, I read
that isn't, this... that isn't saying it stopped working. That's saying we did something different and it died.
I don't know if it's so much they did something different. I feel like they just stopped giving it the medication.
Because but my point is, if you're saying it worked for 3 years, it may have worked for 10 years.
If you
have a cancer treatment and then you're told you have to take the tablet, you don't go, this treatment kept someone alive for this amount of time. Oh, but also we stopped giving them these tablets.
We stopped giving it to them. I don't know why they stopped giving it, whether to see if it would affect it or whether didn't want to continue paying for
did
it.
Did they
want to
test if I'm it would survive without it?
Yeah.
Because actually, giving somebody a heart transplant and then living, like you said, about 70 days, three years when the alternative is dying is already like, wow, fantastic. Let's pursue this and stop spending all this money on this monkey medication, which...
Let's just go ahead. Like, let's kill the monkey. Let's just move to a guy, right? Like, someone find a guy. And also, if we waste all the money on this monkey meds, we can't give it to the guy.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, though, because it's sort of like getting into the discussion of, like, that monkey's basically a veteran of a war. Yeah, salute the monkey.
Look, dude.
And it's like, why is he not entitled to the rest of his life? He took a big risk.
Look, my friend, I try very hard. It's a very difficult job. I try very hard to shelter you from the real world in terms of them just killing animals that they work with. I try not to mention it. I really try not to.
I don't remember. The scientists also try not to mention it.
Yeah, they do. But I mean, I just feel like it brings the episodes down a little bit.
But
I mean, it's one of those things in the back of your mind. You know, those animals are not like those rats they're testing on.
Well, sure. Yeah. If we're going to, as a society, we're going to do these sort of animal experimentation, like obviously it's not going to be part of the funding model to keep an animal alive indefinitely once you've got the proof you need. Mm. But as a society, if we're going to do this and an animal actually, like, through no choice of its own, took a large risk, and then we just go, cool, that worked. you actually successfully passed the test and we're not going to pay for you to be alive anymore. Like, that's just kind
of
sucks.
One of my friends from home, when they were in uni, their job, they had to kill him.
The person?
They had to kill the lab rats, the lab mice.
Oh, what, themselves? They had to do it?
I think they did, yeah. Or they at least talked to me about it.
Why can't they just let them free? Well, it depends what experiment they've done on them, obviously. But there'll be some experiments where you can just let them free.
I just feel like, honestly, in some cases, the kinder thing is to kill them. It's just, one of the issues is you can't reuse them. They're not reusable because they've already been tainted by the previous
experiment.
They're
not control anymore, yeah.
Another thing is that these animals are not socialized. Like, with rats, socialization is incredibly important. Okay, put it this way. If you were locked up let's say a test runs for 2 years, or for a year, right? Rats live about a year and 11 months. Let's say it survives, its actual life expectancy for this rat is 2 years, right? You spend a year in a test, half of your life in a test, and then you get let out to be a pet.
Retirement.
Okay. Maybe it's one of those tests of where they give the rat drugs or where they make it have depression. What we do to animals in animal testing is horrific, and I generally try not to think about it. Mm. Actually, I think our bonus episode... this is the thing. Either our bonus episode or an episode for another episode is going to be very specifically about horrific animal treatment.
You saved them all up. You say you've sheltered me. You've actually saved them for this one bombshell.
Just
of an
get
episode.
It all out in one go. I mean, dump. Every 3 years, I'm just gonna concentrate all of the horrible animal stuff, and then let you wait for 3 more years.
Yeah,
to forget
rip it off
about
like a band aid. Yeah.
But it's such an interesting thing because, this might get clipped out because it's long. But in an economics term, so in economics, you have this idea of externalities, which is like. You drive your car, the cost to you is your time, the cost of the petrol, the cost of upkeeping the car, and then the cost to the environment and to the general population is called the externality, which is like worse air quality, sound pollution, that sort of thing, right? So, and then you have positive externalities, that's a negative externality, and then you have a positive externality, so the Moderna doing their research into the vaccine, they've done that. You could argue primarily for profit, but the positive externality is everyone doesn't get a disease and other industries don't have their workers off sick for as long, and so there's positive externalities to that, right? The amount of positive externalities that are created by lab animals is just humongous, and we just don't give anything back to that animal at all.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why that's not even a topic of discussion. It's like, that's such a gigantic philosophical decision that you are just, because that is it's abuse. It's a massive, on massive scale abuse. Same thing as arguably the meat industry. It's a massive,
it's better than the meat industry, personally.
Because it has a positive external, a massive positive
external.
It's
almost necessary.
Yeah, of course. But it's just like there's no discussion whatsoever about this, especially on the level of what would be considered like a higher level animal, like a chimpanzee or an ape. It's just, we've just completely desensitized ourselves to it. And it's absolutely insane. And I don't know how we can consider ourselves to be like anything other than a potentially horrible species. When we only it's like the good guy philosophy, you know, like if you consider yourself a good guy and you just consider yourself good guy and then you manipulate your own perception of the world.
Anything you do is good because you're a good guy.
Yeah, to uphold your self-image as good guy. Mm. We have that with us as a species. It's like, oh, we just filter out all the stuff that makes us bad guy and we focus on all the stuff that makes us good guy. And it's just so weird that there's no discussion about it, and there's no like, oh well, maybe if you maybe everyone all the scientists can have a little rat pet rats that are their pet
too
rats
many.
I know there's too many, but like it doesn't
no,
mean
I
you
know
don't,
I know there's
just
no
because
there's
the problem
no good
is
way.
Massive doesn't mean you don't do anything about
no,
it.
I know I try not to think about it. This is something I've tried to put out of my mind for a while because it's such a big question that it's not that I don't have an answer to it. Of course I don't have an answer to it because I'm just a person. Mm. But I don't even have I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so when it comes to like prison abolition, or like, you know, the problem with prisons.
Yeah.
That's a big problem, and I know what I think about it, and I know what can be done. Like, as in, like, I've read and I have an understanding, and I'm I have an idea of where we can go. There seems like a way out of this. When it comes to lab animals, I don't know an alternative. Like, people talk about tissues. We've talked about this before. People talk about tissues and using organs that are grown or harvested without killing
that.
I'm like,
the same, is it?
But in going just from that to jumping into a human is such a leap, and so many people will die. And in the system that we've got right now, it's going to be poor people. It's going to be native people. It's going to be, you know, like people of color and all of the people that are basically sort of stepped on by society. And that's not, if I have to ask myself, would I rather, like, you know, rats and monkeys and mice be killed, or would I rather people be killed? Probably the rats and monkeys and mice, right?
Sure.
It depends on the people, obviously, but I mean, it's a tough one because I can't even see a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know where to go. I don't know what the solution is. It's so difficult. It's frustrating being in that position. It's so difficult having a situation where you just don't know. You just don't. What can you do?
I get, but what I think bugs me about it, like the idea of testing animals, yes, that's a really difficult subject. But then what is strange to me is that even if you're like, you're forcing a risk, you're forcing a game on these animals, right? Which is like, you might die, etc. But then even if you don't die, even if you survive, the outcome is still dreadful for you. It's like, and it's one of these things where, like, you're living as a society, you're creating wealth off the back of this thing, and then you're just harvesting all of this potential for yourself, and even the ones that make it through, you're just then going, right, stick them in a gas chamber and kill them. It's not even like, you know, lab rats have a 30% chance of survival. It's like, lab rats have a 30% chance of survival, and if they survive, they have a 100% chance of being dead straight away as well. It's just like, you can have the conversation about whether it's right to test on animals, but then you have to have, if you decide yes, you then have to then have a follow-up conversation on, like, but what do we do with the ones that survive? Do we just kill them too?
Well, I've actually just, while you were talking there, and I mean, this is a tough one. So I was looking up laboratory primates and their lives in and after research. This is a study from 2016, this is an article from 2016, a scientific one, of course. And it'll be linked in the description, obviously. I had a look at it, and it was saying, and I don't know if regulations have changed in 2016, but says here, once all data have been collected and the study is completed, the PI is left with a decision of what to do with the monkey. They can continue on to another study in our lab, be sold to another lab, or be euthanized for tissue histology. However, in our case, they rarely can move on to another experiment or another lab due to the regulation that only one major surgical procedure is allowed per animal. And obviously, if it's the same implants being used for, you know, then they can move the monkey on. But it basically sounds like what they're saying is that they're just euthanizing the monkeys, which feels, killing rats and killing mice feels fine.
Thing. Yeah.
I don't say that I don't like it, but it feels, killing rats is something that is literally in children's films as just a thing, right? Like, killing a rat is a very normal thing because we see them as pests. Monkeys, on the other hand, we see as some of our closest relatives. We literally are, I think taxonomically speaking, monkeys, right? We are. And this is something I found out recently, very interesting.
I thought we were apes.
Apes are monkeys. The issue is that the tree splits off. Old world monkeys and new world monkeys, we are sitting between them on that tree, really annoyingly. So that if you want to call both old world monkeys and new world monkeys, you must also concede that all of the apes are monkeys also.
Okay.
Which, fantastic.
Wow.
Great stuff. But you know, we think of monkeys as being, as having sort of like a personality worthy of respect and of life and of, like, you know, freedom from pain and all of that stuff. But at the very least, in 2016, probably still now, can just euthanize them. And it makes sense because you hack up a monkey, what are you going to do? You can't put it back in the wild. You can't put it in a zoo.
Go on.
Like, what are you going to do? You have to euthanize it.
Why can't you put it in a zoo?
If you've taken a healthy monkey and given it major surgical procedures.
Yeah.
And you've implanted microelectrode arrays into its brain, or you've installed an artificial heart or whatever. Like, and also, you probably want to kill it to look at, to see how it's affected its tissues in some cases, right? As well.
Right? you know, guys. What I mean is, but like, if this is what we're doing, let people see it. It's the same thing as like pretending we don't kill 150 billion animals a year. It's like, this is what we know what you're doing. If you're going to defend it, know what you're doing first and accept what you're doing and claim what you're doing and own it. Don't just go, oh, let's pretend we're not doing it, but carry on doing it.
The thing to me, it's interesting because this provides so much utility, not just for humans, but for other animals as well. Like, it provides utility for basically all of the organisms that we kind of come into contact with if we choose to help them, right? Like, the work that's done probably with those laboratory monkeys has probably made it easier for veterinary care for other monkeys that we do care about. And for me, I feel very much the way that a meat eater probably I feel very much like the way a meat eater probably feels when they talk to a vegan, where a meat eater thinks, oh, but I need meat to survive. Like, what else am I going to do? I need to eat meat. But we know that eating meat using animal products for most people is not necessary. And so that's why, to me, obviously, personally, eating meat is morally wrong because it's unnecessary harm.
Yeah.
Right. And I would seek to remove as much unnecessary harm as possible. The laboratory testing of animals edges far more into necessary harm for me. I would love to know of a solution to it, because I want to reduce harm as much as is practicable and possible. I just don't know how with this. And people giving the crappy solutions of, well, tissues or you need to understand how something affects an entire body, right? You can't do an organ transplant on, like, you know, on anything but a full monkey.
Do you think that there's so you're getting into the conversation of like, where does yourself come from? But do you think are there a decent amount of experiments, for example, on a monkey, which you're doing on the body, which you could, for example, do without a prefrontal cortex?
I mean, sure. Okay, this is my issue, right? And I have thought about this as well. That was actually sitting in the back of my head. There is that if you want to make him brain dead, cool. Talks about, but if you're looking at behaviors, or if you're looking at how they react to this, if you want to make that the step between human trials and whatnot, then sure.
For things that are about the body and the way the body functions.
Yeah, then I suppose you technically could, but then also you've got muscle atrophy and you've not got activity, so you can't test X, Y, Z. You know what I mean? So you'd be sacrificing your data to some extent, probably. But is it worth it? That's the really difficult question.
Yeah, and that is ultimately the economic question, which is like, well, we're giving up some of our wealth so that this thing doesn't suffer, and ultimately we don't care.
Yeah.
So,
well, I will say I do think that there are probably a lot of cases where we could limit the use of like non-brain dead animals or full animals and just use organs or tissues or whatever. I'm sure that we could scale back our use of laboratory animals,
or at least start in the individual things and then scale up to a monkey or two or three, as opposed to doing everything on 10 monkeys,
that's
20
not,
monkeys.
That's not quite exactly what we do. But
But I mean, you could use less full monkeys later on by doing some of the experiments on,
I mean, I
organs.
Guess probably, yeah. I don't know enough about this to really make a solid statement, but I do agree with you. I think I think it's a tough one. It's tough. But back to the actual pig heart transplant. So we've spoken about a lot of stuff. We spoke about, this has basically come off of them putting a pig heart into the abdomen of a baboon, and it lasted 3 years. But they had another baboon, and they replaced its heart with a pig heart. And that baboon survived for 9 months and then died from something that's apparently unrelated to the transplant. So they were pretty solid. Okay, well, this transplant system that we've got seems to work fairly well. We can get at least 9 months out of the monkey, out of the baboon. And it dies then from something that's not related to the transplant. Seems pretty solid, seems pretty good. And we could get a heart to work for 3 years in the abdomen of a baboon. So this is all pointing in the right direction. And so on the 7th of January 2022, 57-year-old David Bennett received a genetically modified pig heart. It was as a transplant, by the way, not just a gift. And he had a terminal heart disease that was performed by surgeons of the University of Maryland School of Medicine, led by Bartley Griffith, the director of the university's cardiac transplant program. And right now, as of recording, David Bennett is recovering. He was off the heart and lung machine as of the 18th of January. And the FDA had granted permission for the transplant on the 31st of December 2021. So only about a week before they went ahead with the surgery. So they put it through the FDA and they were always fine with it. So the quote here from Griffith, the lead sort of lead surgeon on this, we've not seen the top end of how long the donor heart can go on for. We will be disappointed if David does not get many months of survival. So they're talking in months, right? Mm. If he gets a lot of months, then they'll be happy, right? Like if he gets fewer than a few months, then they're disappointed, but they haven't seen the ceiling of it yet, you know, because the first that baboon died from an unrelated thing, and the other baboon lasted 3 years, and then they took it off. So why a pig, do you think? Why did they decide to put a pig heart into David?
Have they got similar immune systems to us?
No. Oh. Well, no, that's not really the that's not really the reason why. So the kind of answer I was looking for was more, I mean, David wasn't able to get a human heart transplant. That is the main thing. Like they did. Yeah. Like,
oh, right.
That is no, the, I said that, but why pig as opposed to a different thing?
Oh, well, Jamp said it already earlier in the podcast.
It's just pig hearts are really, well, not really similar, but similar enough.
Same size.
Mm.
Same size.
Yeah. Same size.
Okay.
Yeah, same size. That's literally not literally. There's sure. obviously other considerations, but one of the main things I saw is that pig hearts are roughly the same size, which makes surgery a whole lot easier. So
probably similar strength as well, right? Because you need to be able to pump the blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although they are vertical, whereas we're horizontal.
But they're also much larger than us as well. So
yeah.
The thing is, I mean, a heart is a heart. Like it's, yeah. I mean, if it's you're roughly the same sized animal, I think I reckon it'd probably be relatively fine.
Strength. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, but he was ineligible for human transplantation. There weren't any other options for him. Like a heart pump was specifically mentioned. He couldn't get an artificial heart pump, so they decided to use a pig, because pig hearts are similar size to human hearts. So I've got a quote here from from Griffith. So it says, "Sewing the pig's heart into the patient's chest cavity was not uniquely difficult," Griffith told The Lancet. "The geometry did not quite line up, so we had to do some alterations, but nothing that an experienced cardiac surgeon would not be able to manage." It's pretty solid. So, you know, as far as surgeries go, apparently popping a pig heart into some bloke, pretty straightforward if you're a cardiac surgeon.
Nothing a cardiac surgeon can't match.
I love the vibe that this guy is giving off in this interview. Like, there's nothing you can't manage if you're pretty good at heart surgery, you know? Yeah.
It's like,
pretty straightforward for us heart surgeons.
Like when you see a magazine or a book advertising, it's like, in all good news agents. It's not in the news agent you go to. It's a bad news agent.
Yeah, maybe no other cardiac surgeon. He trained for ages and no one else can do it. He just wants to look really cool. Yeah. So... I've got a question. How did they modify the pig heart? Well, I've already told you this. Like, they had given David immunosuppressive drugs, the patient immunosuppressive drugs. They've taken off some of the outside proteins of the pig cells on the heart, and added 6 human genes.
They haven't done this in the genetic modification.
Genetically, no, they've done it genetically. Okay, six human genes.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just like paint it on.
No. So they actually. So what they did is, I think they essentially. God, how do you do this? I think you take the, what's it called, the embryo, the little eggy thing before it's fully a pig. You know,
pig boy.
Then you muck around with that. You pop it into a.
Muck around with it.
Just, I'll be back in a second. I'm going to muck around with this pig heart.
Not the heart. The pig before it's a pig.
Oh, muck around the embryo. Baby pig, yeah.
You muck around with the embryo.
Yeah.
Unborn pig, basically.
Yeah.
And then you mess around with that, put it in a pig. So the pig is pregnant with that pig that you've mucked around with.
Sorry, in the context of a pig, muck around sounds like you're rolling in like a mud.
Yeah, pen. Either that
no,
or
no, no,
David
I'm,
Cameron.
No, muck around with his DNA.
Mucking around with it.
You muck around with his DNA, you know?
Got to make sure it's a pig. You've got to roll around some mud.
They actually made ten genetic changes, which is apparently, unless you knock out the certain genes from the pig, the heart will be rejected within minutes.
Oh,
yeah. So they knocked out 3 genes from the pig, and then added in, I think 6 human genes, and then made another change to make sure that the pig's heart didn't continue growing inside the new person. Otherwise, that'd be a pig heart bursting out of you.
What happened to my dog? My dog ran around so much, his heart got too big, and then he got ill because he had too big a heart.
Oh, that really is a cute. Problem. Yeah. No, that is actually
such a muscly heart.
Mm.
Not a pig's heart, though, is it?
It can happen to people as well,
no.
though. Your heart can
use
too large. Too it's bad. Yeah. So yeah, they basically changed the genes around a little bit, and they gave him an immunosuppressant drug regimen, and then also an anti-CD40 antibody, basically an antibody that's against whatever. It doesn't really matter the specifics of this. Essentially, what they did is they changed the genes of the pig heart. Well, changed the genes of an unborn pig, grew a pig, took out the heart, popped it in a bloke, and gave him some drugs so that he didn't reject it. And what does this mean for the future, do you think?
Probably they will do this a lot more.
I mean, so I've got a quote here from Karen Mashke, I think it is. There are no ongoing clinical trials for xenotransplantation. The experience of a single patient is not going to provide anywhere near enough safety and effectiveness data for translating the procedure into everyday clinical practice. It really is a proof of concept experiment. And that is also from The Lancet. So
what a downer.
Well, yes and no, because this person, Karen Mashke, I think. Didn't look up how to pronounce her name beforehand. But this Karen has said that there are a lot of questions that need answering before the FDA can approve a clinical trial. How long can we expect the organ recipient to live? What is their quality of life? What mechanisms lead to failure? What are the risks of zoonotic disease transmission? And actually, she was given a grant to work on the ethical policy framework for xenotransplant clinical trials. So that project is going to run for 3.5 years. And a lot of this, like so much of this actually just depends. It relies on how David's doing. So he's going to be like, they're going to watch him, obviously, to see what's going on, because his experience could actually inform the future directions of the procedure. But yeah, like essentially this one transplant is not, okay, now it's safe. It's okay, let's try and build a framework now for testing this for safety.
Yeah.
And then I think, I don't know, maybe in like 10, 20 years, xenotransplants could be more common.
Do you know if they've done any tests on David to like how his blood oxygen levels are and how the heart actually performs?
I don't know, not to my knowledge. I mean, they probably have done. Whether that's being released to the public or not, I don't know. I mean, he was by the 18th of January, like, so, you know, a couple months ago, he was only just sort of waking up off the lung machine, okay. All that sort of stuff.
So they haven't sent him for a marathon yet?
Nah, not quite yet. Nah. Apparently he is reaching out to people. You know, he was reaching out to people in the middle of January.
Physically or speaking to them?
I think messaging them or whatever.
Okay.
You
know? He can lift his arm.
No, I think he's doing fairly well. I mean, I checked around for more articles and I did not see that he had, had any problems at the time of recording. So, you know, and I last looked it up today just to be sure. And I hadn't seen anything. So, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm aware, if something changes between the recording of this and it coming out, then, of course, I'll add a little something in. I'll pop in right now to give you an update.
He's the bodybuilding champion of the world. No.
He's lived for 100 years.
And
David Cameron's tried to fuck him.
Oh, God. Okay. Anything else you want to say before we move on to...
I'd like to leave it at that.
Quick fire quiz?
Yes.
What a great way to end a podcast. Dun, 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 dun. David Cameron edition.
No.
So the quick fire quiz is the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asks a question wins. What do they win, Jap?
A lovely pig's heart.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
No, I can't provide that.
Why not?
Because Jap took it.
There's loads of them.
Is it me?
Jap has a pig heart.
David, nice to meet you. Oh, yeah, thanks for reaching out.
I'm in witness protection.
Okay, Luke, what is your buzzer? Jap, what is your buzzer?
It's going to be mine.
Very good.
Wow, dearie me. So my question for you both is, what are the two major concerns with xenotransplants? That was neck and neck.
I think it was Jam.
I think the person. I think the first person to make the noise again.
Oh, that's not fair.
Rejection and infection.
Rejection and infection.
Jam, you win the point. What? Well done. What? I didn't tell you to go. Also, Jam did get it first. I just
didn't
want to hear
Jam to go either.
Yeah,
I don't have to.
I just want to hear both do the noises again. How about you both get a point?
Democracy is a lie.
It's not democracy. This is a, I don't know, an autocracy. No, you both get a point. Well done. And I would like to add something to our audience watching. Please help me out. I remember a show from when I was a kid, or a movie, and there was a joke of a character who had a monkey heart and they couldn't do too much activity because they had like a monkey heart. And I tried to search for it so much when I was researching this and I couldn't find it. So if you know what the TV show or movie is that was probably skewed at kids in the 90s or noughties, where a character had a monkey heart as a joke, let me know, please.
I think that was Postman Pat, wasn't it?
Tracy Beaker.
Before we go, we would like to thank...
That's why Elaine was such a pain.
All of our patrons, with a very special thank you to executive producer Rosa Rodriguez, and thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod over at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too, or head over to SciGuys.co.uk, or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod @gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
@gmail.com. You can follow me @NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me @Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me @LukeCutforth everywhere.
Well, goodbye.